Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
You are listening to The Tracy L. Clark Show with me, Tracy L., where I'm going to empower you and teach you how to live your extraordinary life. Tune in every Tuesday, 8 a.m. Pacific, on Transformation Talk Radio, where I combine ministry, science, and spirituality to reveal the steps you need to let go of your perceived limitations. Have you had the limiting self-talk over and over? Have you noticed you allow your fears to hold you back? If you're truly ready for change, I invite you to join me, Tracy L. Clark, and start your journey of transformation now. Welcome to the Tracy L. Clark Show. I'm your host, Tracy L., here on Transformation Talk Radio. And I'm really actually excited about our episode today because our guest is an expert when it comes to the DNA culture of a corporation. And for our listeners out here, this is why I really was excited to bring her on, because not only is she a new book that you all have to read, and we'll get into that, but I came from 20 years in the corporate background, and a lot of people know that in my story, and a lot of you that listen, you struggle within your companies, whether it's management, whether you're moving up, executives. And what we always remember is that when we have a company, it starts out as a baby, just like you and I started out as babies, and we have to grow and grow into who we are. And with that becomes a lot of challenges and a lot of changes. And if we're not changing who we are on a regular basis, usually you'll see companies will start to falter. And then we start to forget that that DNA is just of your company. This is why I love the name of her book. The DNA of your company is just energetically like the DNA of you. It is constantly shifting and changing. So I'm so excited that we do have Claudette Rowley here today. She has launched her new book, Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. Welcome, Claudette. I'm so glad you joined us.
Oh, thanks, Tracy. Great to be here.
You know, you have been in and out of thousands of companies and, you know, these Fortune companies that have literally CEOs, executives, you've helped to restructure them over your career. And I know this is why you wrote this book, but what was the number one thing you notice when you go into a company that is really creating a block in their culture and how they grow?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And I think most of it boils down to how people relate to each other and how, whether they trust each other or not. And when you see the leaders, you know, and it's a basic answer, but if we boil almost every situation down, you'd probably get to that root cause, that there is really, people do not feel safe and comfortable to speak up, and usually for good reasons. Yeah. And so the company is losing tons of ideas, tons of potential, tons of innovation and productivity because of it.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people that I hear, which you've exactly touched on, trust and fear of saying, mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. If I go to my manager, and I've heard this a lot, you've probably seen this, and maybe you can give some examples to how people can deal with that, is when they say, I want to speak up, their manager, they have a fear that if they speak up to make a decision, that either it'll be stolen from them, like you say, mm-hmm. trust, or yeah. they'll be shut down so they don't seem like they're shining or being brighter mm-hmm. than who that management is. How, when you see that, how do you start to mold a company? Because we're moving into this new direction. If companies don't start seeing people as people and not numbers, mm-hmm. right, which you get very clearly,
yeah, yeah.
And this is one of the big things behind your book, is how, when you go into a company, what are the first flags that you start to see that you can start to move people, because it is all relationships, right? Mm-hmm. All mm-hmm. relationships, to start to form the trust so people that are listening can start to go, wow, maybe I can take some of these tips, because I really want people to go and get your book and understand how can they start using your book in their company at any size. I know you deal with large companies, but baby companies, when we're just starting to open a business, what would you suggest that they start to look at? So as they're creating their business, they're not following these pitfalls that you see now with these, you know, massive organizations that you deal with.
Yeah. And it's such, and when you're starting a company, it's such a great time, as you said, to really be conscious and intentional about what you're doing, right? And how you're forming your culture. And I think one thing not everybody thinks about sometimes is that culture will form and evolve whether you're paying attention to it or not. So I would say, well, you might as well create what you want, because otherwise you're going to get something you really, really don't want in your culture. And in terms of tips, and I do work with companies of all sizes, and I'm working with a company now that's been around for 35 years and it has 35 people, you know, so sometimes we, you know, and it used to be 20, right? So companies of all sizes and all ages, it's fascinating. But when you're starting out, you really want to think about what kind of culture do we want and need? What's a culture that will energize us and inspire us? What's a culture that will support our business model and the industry we're in? I always think of culture as like a fingerprint. No two cultures are alike. They may overlap, they may be similar, but they're not going to be identical. And based on that, how do we build trust? How do we want to relate to each other to get the outcomes and results we need and support each other and start having those kinds of conversations about the culture you envision and then how you can actually take action to get there? And I believe in preemptive conversations. If we have a conflict, how will we handle it? Yeah. If we have just a disagreement on direction, how will we handle it? How will we innovate and collaborate together? Things like that.
Do you find that some of the biggest stumbling blocks, especially for companies that have been around a long time, is like just as humans in general, is change?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Change, and in the book that I wrote, Cultural Brilliance, one of the cornerstones of it is creating a roadmap for companies to actually, or any organization actually, to really use change as a springboard for more success and more productivity. But yeah, change. And one of the reasons change becomes a roadblock in organizations is because most organizations do change well. So there are exceptions, of course, to this, but they'll push it down on people. They won't introduce it. They'll introduce it through email or something, as opposed to, maybe there's an email, but then you have a town hall meeting and then you have individual meetings and then you have this and you have that. So people really understand, what does the change mean? How is it going to impact me? Which is their number one question, usually, yes. Right? How does this impact me or my division or team? And what's my part in it? And what do I need to do to contribute? So when we look at change differently and we handle it differently, we get much better results.
Much better results. And then also, too, you probably find that people start to trust a lot easier because an email can be interpreted any way, right? Yeah. Yeah. Depending on, and we all know, you open your email, depending on how you feel that day when you've walked into the office, if you're not having a good day, you can interpret that change as really, really negative, which then can spiral in other areas rather than that communication, which you promote a lot of the communication. And I guess when you actually started to write your book, because the energy, I'm going to talk about the energy of your book, is really, it's beautiful because it's really about feel, like, when I'm in there, it was about feeling. Like, you have a lot of feeling in the company. Yes, you have to go with your mental component of what you're going to do for your action steps. Mm-hmm. But your companies are, like I said, they're like energy. They're just, they're life forces, right? Yeah, so you really get into understanding of how people have to realize, one, that people are not all the same. So they're not all going to receive everything the same. Yeah. And I know I get a lot of middle and upper managers and CEOs who are like, Tracy, how do I even, so they're trying to feel what their company's doing and how they create this change and move the bus. And they start to look at it as very expansive, which creates their stress. But you break it down. So like you said, with your roadmap, so the people that are feeling overwhelmed, this is why I'm like, pick up the book, because the people that are feeling overwhelmed, you've given them like a roadmap, because it is baby steps, isn't it? When you're starting to either grow or change the company.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so what would you suggest to those people that are feeling so overwhelmed? They're going to start to pick up your book, read it through. And how would you suggest that they can use Cultural Brilliance to actually, really start to take those baby steps? Because it can't always access you, right? Yeah, you're busy. Right. There's only so much of you that can go around.
Yeah.
We can clone you.
Right. Yeah. Not yet. But the book, yeah, the book does lay a roadmap, as you said. And I think people do get overwhelmed. It's true. It's part of being human. These changes feel cultural changes. Cultural change will be unwieldy at times, right? It's going to have its ups and downs, like any change with a lot of people involved. So it's understandable that people feel overwhelmed. And I think it's realizing that you are taking one step at a time. You know, you can use the book as take the roadmap in the book and tweak it for your own organization. Use what works for you is what I always tell people, right? You may only use a third of the book. You may only use a quarter of the book, whatever you need. But then also realizing that even though you plot out a plan, what I found in my consulting work is we have a plan, but then we revise it. That there's, we thought we were going to go down path A, but then it becomes very clear to me or someone else that we need a different path. And so having that flexibility to step and regular stepping back and reflecting, how is this working, is key. Versus let's continue down the plan because we wrote it, which some companies, that's part of their culture.
It is.
Because we have hereby written it. And it's like, no, stop and check in and get feedback on a regular basis on what you're doing. And that will help decrease the overwhelm too, because you'll be constantly getting input about whether something's working or not.
Yeah. Do you notice too that some of those companies that I've noticed that get in that, we've got to do it, it's the plan. They're actually, a lot of them, if you start listening to them, they're afraid that if they don't execute the plan to be final, to where they thought their outcome was going to be, now they've failed. Like, well, they're destroying their business. So they keep going down this path. How do you reverse those people? What have you found are the great tools to say, well, wait a minute, I know this was your plan. You wrote it. I always say business plans are like, and no matter what we do, just our guidelines. I'm like, they're just kind of like, you know, our guidelines, but you might decide, like you and I both have our radio shows, right? And you're on Transformation Talk Radio too. And that's something else we added to our plate. And we could have said, let's not do it, but we wanted to create that into our business model to help more people. But if we never had that on our plan, we'd say, no, no, no. And we would miss all these other opportunities. What do you do with those people? Because I hear about them all the time. And I hear people come to me and they're like, Tracy, my manager won't change, but our revenue's going down. People are mad, but they're like, no, this was exactly what we laid out to do. We got to finish it or it's a failure.
Yeah, yeah. And it is a common thing. And I think one of the things in the book that I talk about and I talk about in my work is that we want to look at culture at three levels, which is mindset, behavior, and structure. Yes. And so you're talking about the mindset piece. That's how I interpret it, right?
Yeah.
And so when we're doing the initial phase of the cultural assessment work, we really identify the mindsets, in not of people specifically, but that are prevalent in the company. Because if one person has a mindset, there's a high likelihood that other people have it. They are contagious. So when you can start it, you know, wow, we've noticed in our culture, we have a tendency to always follow a plan, even if it's not working. Isn't that interesting? So part of this work actually starts to highlight some of those mindsets that actually don't make, everything makes sense because every mindset evolves for a reason, right? But it doesn't make sense in terms of where you're trying to get to, right? It doesn't help you. It's not supportive of your path. And so that can be a way to notice collectively what our mindsets might be, because then folks don't feel singled out. The other thing when I'm working with people who said, you know, we have a plan, so we're following it through, like that manager that won't change, your example. Yeah. It's also saying, well, you know, it's building a logical case. That's when I say, let's bring the logic back in and say, we started at A, we need to get to B, and this path we're taking actually doesn't seem to be working. Might we tweak it? Here are some suggestions. And sometimes that helps get through to the folks who are very rooted or wedded to a particular path. Like if you give them another option that they like, they may shift to it.
Well, I always say that awareness of a new perception, right? When we can reverse our perception. So this is, when you come in, you can do that for them. When you come in, you can say, because they've asked you to come in, right? I'm struggling. Yeah. You know exactly what you're doing. You've worked with all these major companies. You've seen what works and what doesn't work. So how would a person that says, okay, I've read a book. I want to maybe give them a different awareness. I'm a middle manager. This isn't working. The they're not listening and our division's dying because we hear that a lot. And right now we are in change. Companies have to change right now. Like we're not functioning the way we used to function. How could they maybe even start to have an approach because they're inside the company? What do you suggest when people are inside the company to maybe say, you know, I noticed this isn't working and not be insulting to that middle manager? Because you said trust, right?
Yeah, trust. And I think it's, you can build, you're right. When you're inside, you can, it's what I call building a case for it, right? Yeah. So you can say, you can put together an overview. This is where, you know, this is what I see happening. This is what we wanted to have happen. Here are my three suggestions for getting us back on track. And you can do it in part, if you're, let's say it's your manager, you can do it in partnership and with deep respect for that person. You know, it might even be something like, I know, manager, you have been so overwhelmed. I've been aware that things aren't working as we'd hoped. So I put together some thoughts and ideas. Could we talk about it? And here's the, I already put together a plan, a proposed plan. So when people stick to what they're doing, it's also often because they either are afraid to admit it's not working, like you mentioned earlier, fear, right? Because of what might happen. They don't know what to do differently and they don't have the bandwidth to think about what to do differently. So they stick to it. But if you offer someone another solution and you do it in a really respectful way and suggest that you could come into, you know, you could help each other out, you could do it together, whatever, a lot of times that actually works because you've just given them something they actually need. And you don't need to say, you know, you don't need to criticize what they did. You don't go there, right?
No. You're just
saying, you know, I know we need this result. Here's another way to get there.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that is just exactly key there is, and I speak about it, you speak about it, it's your words can be so powerful in a company. And if you're discerning and careful how you are speaking to someone, if you're like, well, I just think that's a stupid idea, now all of a sudden you've triggered that person, right? Yeah. And now they're going to be shutting down and not hearing anything. And I like what you said is going forward to them with already having the ideas of, perhaps, you know, we could look at this or maybe this would work. And so people listening to understand that is such key in your company. Yeah. Words are so important when you're delivering something.
Yeah.
They're not taught that. I see we have up, I'm in Canada. I know you're in the States. Yeah. We have a lot of companies that just look like high school. No, they don't learn in high school how to communicate, how to be respectful, which then shifts that space into their environment.
Yeah.
You notice that? Because that's what I find creates toxic companies, which will stall their revenue as well.
Yeah. I definitely see that. People who also have not learned to handle their power very well. So they wield it, they use it in toxic ways. You know, toxic for me would be, you know, stabbing people in the back, gossip, things that are really actually hurtful that are not, I don't think, you know, labeling it as office politics is acceptable because it just completely violates trust. It's not a way to be a person. I think that's huge. And when leaders, you know, if you go to a leader and say, I think something's not working, this is what I've heard from many leaders. It feels like they just dumped a burden on their lap if you don't come with a solution, proposed solution. Yeah. Like to them, it's just like, I already had so much on my shoulders. Now you just added 10 more pounds. So it's also understanding what a leader's going through when they hear something's not working and they're already overwhelmed. So when you come with that plan or set of ideas or three possible solutions, you've done them a huge favor, which means they're more likely to hear you, right? Versus just shutting you down because they can't take it. Yeah.
Actually, I love how you said that because the energy of that, even when you were talking, is obviously I feel, see, hear, that's what I do. And as soon as you said that, like this isn't working. You could just feel how heavy that would go into somebody's body, right? Because we're all busy and then you go, you want me to find the solution?
Right.
So people are listening. Yeah, bring the solution. Mm-hmm. So then what's the road? What is that next step for that person who brought the solution and they still got shut down?
Yeah.
You know, because that happens a lot, right?
It does. And it's I think it really depends on the company too, right? And even within one company, you could find, you know, you're going to find leaders and managers with all these different styles. But if you did get shut down, I think you can either in that conversation or a subsequent conversation, you can go back and ask questions. You know, I wanted to check in. I was really curious what, I love the word curious because it's so non-judgmental. I was curious. I was curious, you know, what was it about my idea that didn't work for you, right? How could I improve or modify it? And keep going through that, right? But I think if you're curious and you're respectful, you're not triggered, you don't go in and have this conversation if you're triggered or upset, bad idea.
Don't send an email.
Never send an email. Right now, definitely not. Yes. That you can have almost any conversation, right? Yeah. And a lot of times it's really, I find, now there are exceptions to this, but most of the shutting down, so to speak, I find is right now in 2019 has to do with people feeling overwhelmed themselves.
Yeah.
You know, what is it sometimes for other reasons? Absolutely. But often it's overwhelmed.
Yeah, I actually have to agree. I think people are doing more nowadays than they ever did before. And with the communication factor, how do you find that? I have a lot of people that will say in their work environment, they'll say, well, they still heavily rely on email, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So email, and I get it, it's good, or they're getting overwhelmed, they're getting CC'd on so many emails. And to me, when I look at the energy of emails, they're great, but we also get there's a lot of broken communication.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's almost like we got to get back to talking to people and less emailing and less texting. Yet there seems like so many more companies want to go to this virtual platform. Mm-hmm. But don't you find with so many companies you've worked with that that's also a detriment? Because even, you know, you call a company and you can't even get a person on the phone. I'm dating myself, but I find that really frustrating. I like to talk to someone and say, you know, can you help me? Here I need to go to. But even if I'm a communication, that seems to be where there's so many breaks within companies now. Because they're not talking.
They're not talking. And it is a huge issue. You know, there's a book called Time, Talent, and Energy by Michael Mankins, and I forget his co-author. And in the book, they talk about the fact that we have more meetings than ever before, but we have less communication. And one of the reasons is because when we think back to when I started my career, also one of my first jobs, I still got the voice message from the administrative assistant on the pink slip, right? And then while I was there, we got voicemail. But, you know, so it used to be so much harder to schedule a meeting when you think about it. You couldn't send an email to 20 people. You had to call someone, you had to get them on the phone or get their secretary and go through this whole process. And so our meetings were more meaningful because they were harder to schedule. And now we can have so many. So it's this weird, there's more communication, but there's less communication, as you're saying, that meaningful and works. I've walked into companies where people are sitting next to each other. And I'll say, well, did you talk to so-and-so about blah, blah, blah? Well, I emailed them and they didn't get back to me. I mean, this is true. I'm not making this. This is absolutely not exaggerated in any way. Okay, you sit 10 feet from them. Might you go over and ask them if they have a minute sometime today? And it's because people have gotten so used to email, right? Then I don't have to actually talk to you. I don't have to do anything uncomfortable, right?
That is massive.
Yeah.
Of how much our communication, just by say 10 feet away.
Yeah.
Now I left corporate. I was in for 20. I left about 9-10 years ago now, and we still semi talk. But I remember there would be so like 100 emails CC to everybody, and you're like, "Do I even need this?"
Overwhelming.
It is overwhelming, and it's hard to process. The brain gets overwhelmed, and I always say our brain is there to keep us safe. So if we're overwhelmed, we're going to shut down and procrastinate, not even look at that stuff, right? Because it's like stress, too much stress, and so. That's a hard chain to break that I would say has to start to change, because now look at all the time wasted. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They didn't get back to me, yet you're 10 feet. You could have walked over and probably solved that problem in 5 minutes.
Absolutely. And it's huge. And a lot of companies, when I'm talking with them, we're talking about this issue. We're talking about judgment and discernment. Yeah. When do you email and when do you have a conversation, right? So if it's a couple email exchanges and you're not getting anywhere, I'm like you, I pick up the phone. Like, let's get down to brass tacks and figure this out. Yeah. You know, clearly it's getting, somebody's getting lost in translation. No one's doing anything wrong. We're just not communicating in a way that works, you know, is getting the job done. Yeah. So discernment about when you talk, when you email. And knowing, and I know there's some industries I'll work in where email is a form of documentation now, and they do need to do some of it, which is fine, right? But there are things they don't need to document, and they can get up and talk, and really looking at what's the simplest way forward here.
Yeah.
Communication. Yeah.
Which
usually talking. Which
do you think it's also too, because a new generation coming up, they don't talk much. They just text and they email and they just, you know, Twitter or whatever they do, tweet or Twitter or, you know, yeah. All these little things. I can't figure that one out. I tried, but I was too overwhelmed. I was like, okay, there's too much stuff. But do you feel that that's also part of what's changing companies and culture? Is that the companies that are, the kids that are coming up, they're not used to this communication platform. They're used to no communication. They break up over text, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I think it swung that way. And then I think it's slowly starting to come back because everyone, I think, pretty much realizes it's gone too far in the no communication direction, the no talking direction. Yeah. So I think there's more of that. We actually do need to sit and talk. We do need to, you know, and the biggest changes that come about in companies that I work with, whether I'm helping them or they're, you know, I did help them and now they're on their own working on it, is that they actually started to engage in effective communication, which to me is the right person getting the right information at the right time.
Yeah.
So they can take action. And that started to improve. I think, yeah, the younger generation, it's interesting. My son is 16 and he has a cell phone, of course, but he doesn't have his voicemail set up. He never set it up. And I've asked, like, why would I want a message, voicemail message? Like, I don't just want to really talk to people, you know? It's texting. He reads on it. Of course, he's required to answer the phone if I call him or his father calls him, right? But
I know that one.
He's not really talking on the phone.
Yeah.
You know, he is texting. And so I think that generation is going to have to learn how to bring the verbal communication back into, you know, into their lives, because nothing changes without verbal communication. It's impossible.
You need it. And you need to hear the tone and the word. So I know we have to take a quick break. So tell everybody, where can they get a copy of your book? Where's the best place for them to go and to find you and your website? And I know you're on Transformation Talk Radio. We're going to have the link in there as well, so you can listen to more of Planet. But where can they find you and where can they get the book from?
Great. Thank you. Two places. My website is culturalbrilliance.com. You can find the book there. You can find resources, find out more about what I do. And then the book is also on Amazon, Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence.
I love it. It's the easiest way. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we come back. I'm going to ask Claudette and I want to know, what was the drive behind getting this book out? Because you definitely want to get a copy of it if you are wondering how you can make the best possible culture in your company and the company you work with. So we'll be back right after the break.
Are you searching? Looking for a sign? A message you need to hear from the great unknown, from the most mysterious place that is the most familiar to your soul and the depths of who you are. The universe put someone here to talk to, someone God gave a blessing to that you may find insight with. TheAngelLady.net. 1-800-323-1790.
Calling all ladies. Are you struggling with neck, back, shoulder pain, or postural issues? You actually might have a related bra problem. Talk to Maria Monti at the Healthy Bra Company. She is a professional postural therapist who offers custom fitted, custom altered bras in 2,500 size combinations specific to your body type, shape, size, anatomical features, and breast weight. Call Maria today to find out more at 360-815-3205.
What is holding you back from living the life you are meant to live? Why is it vital to believe in something bigger than yourself? Are you in physical or emotional pain? Tune in monthly to Vibrant Purposeful Living. Awaken the vibrant life within you with Lou Paradise and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Lou's passion is to help everyone experience positive solutions for life. Find out more about Lou with Vibrant Purposeful Living at LouParadise.com.
If you have been struggling with fear and anxiety, you know how debilitating these emotions can be. You constantly doubt yourself. You can't make decisions and feel more and more insecure and stuck. Dr. Friedman Schaub's book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, will provide you with the insights and tools to break through these challenges. Through a step-by-step process, Dr. Schaub explains how to resolve the subconscious root causes of fear and anxiety and build a strong foundation of inner peace and confidence. Visit www.thefearandanxietysolution.com and get your copy now.
Order your copy of Dr. Friedman Schaub's The Fear and Anxiety Solution today. Visit thefearandanxietysolution.com for more information.
The truth is funny. Shift Happens with Colette Marie Steffen is excited to welcome Karen Benton as a monthly guest host. Tune in on the third Wednesday of each month at 8 a.m. Pacific time to regain confidence and trust in your capacity to create change in your life, your health, your family, and your well-being. Karen Benton is a mother, nurse practitioner, certified body talk practitioner, Franklin Method instructor, and owner of Limitless Living LLC. For more information about Karen, visit KarenBenton.com.
Hello, we're back here at the Tracy L. Clark Show on Transformation Talk Radio with Claudette. We are talking about her new book that has just come out, been since I think it was January 19th, somewhere in that base time space. It's nice and new. Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. Why did you write this? What was the drive for you that you said, I need to get this out there so more people can actually start to understand the importance of their company and the direction it needs to go, and how
I felt like I had something to share that I really wanted to put out into the world, and I knew a book was one of the best ways to do it, you know, in addition to radio shows and public speaking and working with clients. And I really felt like, for me, I saw humanity at a crossroads. I see people at a crossroads, right? And I see we have a couple of different choices. And I had also really gotten intrigued by what I considered somewhat of a problem that many people consider unsolvable, which is, how do you create a great culture? Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of companies that have done it, but because culture is like a fingerprint, you can't take what Google did and apply it directly to your company and get the exact same result, for example. You can take parts of it and it'll probably work really well for you. But you have to understand how your DNA operates, as you were saying, first, before you can really move forward with your own path. And I thought, you know what? I want to put these ideas out because I really want to help folks solve this problem about how to create a great culture, or a brilliant culture, as I call it.
Yeah.
There's so much untapped potential in almost all business cultures. They just leave it on the table. It's the potential, it's success, it's supporting their people, it's growing and developing their people. It's all there and it's not being used. And so the book also was working on, you know, addressing how we source that.
Yeah, and how you actually can, you said Google, which is interesting. You know, I remember when Google was really letting you in to see, you know, how they operate and the things they've done for their company and to try to create this different culture. What's some of the best? I always love positive testimonial stories, because I think when people hear them, mm-hmm. what I see energetically is they get to take that in and say, maybe I can do that, right? It gives them that inspiration. What are some of the best turnarounds you've seen in companies from working with them that, you know, now that you've shared in this book of things that people can look at, when you've gone in and went, wow, we can change this culture. What are some of the feedback and the positivity that you notice from something that maybe was struggling to now they're thriving?
Yeah. A couple examples come to mind. One was actually a school, an educational institution I worked with, and they had this, we did some cultural assessment work, and they had a culture that seemed, that was very focused on being nice. And as someone there said, we're so nice and kind that if you're not nice and kind, we're too nice and kind to tell you. I always remember that.
<right now. laughs> Wow. Okay.
What a great line, right? I've always remembered it. And she was absolutely right. And so what happened was, important things did not get discussed effectively. Problems didn't get solved. So we did some a half day. It's a facilitated exercise that I do that really gets in and it reveals what some of the underlying cultural beliefs are that are driving what's happening that no one really knows about. bottom line there was that they had a belief that conflict was bad. And if conflict was happening, it was bad. So they didn't have overt conflict. Instead, they had this this underlying tension that was constant. And so the conflict sort of seeped out and they'd have circular conversations that didn't go anywhere because they couldn't address something directly because they might have a conflict. Again, this belief was something nobody knew about till we did the exercise. So they didn't, and that's what happens in a lot of organizations. People don't understand what's driving them because it's a belief that formed in the DNA probably years, if not decades earlier, and it's hung around. Because once, you know, as we all know, once you see something and you reveal it, you can make a choice about it. But if you don't know it's there, you're powerless to it, you know, until you know it's there. So that was interesting. So they were able to really make some better choices there for themselves once they knew about that. And the second example that popped to mind is a company I'm just finishing working with right now, probably in the next few months. And they have done amazing work in just 1 year and really turning their culture around. It's a manufacturing company. And they went from not even being able to have an effective meeting, like no one would say anything except for one or two people, to having meetings where people are now, everyone's contributing productively. They had a culture that really, it was interesting when we got down to the cultural beliefs, they had a belief that preserving relationships was the most important thing. And why that didn't work for them was they didn't confront things directly. They didn't have important conversations. They would work around people. Like if you and I had a tense discussion and I didn't want to talk to you anymore, I would never resolve it with you. I'd just go over and talk to Sheila instead.
Wow.
You know how not that staff's productivity and efficiency, right? We could go on and on with the issues with that.
Well, then there's all that tension, right?
It creates all that tension, yeah, right? Yeah. But I've never told you why I'm upset with you. So you just kind of pick up on it. But because of the culture, you don't ask me either.
And then your mind goes wandering and then you're creating stuff not even there.
Then you're creating. And then the next time something happens, everybody gets triggered, right?
Yeah.
And overly triggered, you know. And so we've worked a lot on all of that. So they've really, and that was actually hitting and hurting their operations and their systems and processes because they couldn't have this communication, speaking about communication. So that's another one where we were really able to, really able to in this course of a year, which is not long in culture change at all.
Not at all.
Start turning things around. And I would say we're, maybe 75% of the way there. And it's starting to look and feel like a different company. And to what you've been talking about relating to energy, which I love, right? Because every company does have energy. Every culture has energy. You can feel the vibe when you go in. And I talk about it a little bit in the book,
yeah.
But it's a really new concept for a lot of companies, you know, for some people, it's really hard for them to even understand what I'm actually talking about, you know, because it's just, it's foreign in a way. But the vibe and the energy there is really different now, you know, it's lighter.
Yeah. Light and positive. And what I love what you say is about the company's belief systems. And what I talk about with a lot of people, which is so parallel, people can pick this up. It's so brilliant. You just put it so well. It's our own personal belief system to get in our own way, right? And like you said, we don't even know half the time what they are until we start to uncover them. Like you said, you have a belief system that you're afraid of success or failure, or people aren't nice or whatever that system is. And you literally, which is so brilliant, now you take that into seeing to show the company. Because it is an energy, it is a life form. So people start to look at their businesses as another human being almost. The belief systems of the business, and we call it a collective consciousness, right? Where they're drawing in this collective consciousness, which is creating their fears or whatever their blocks are. This is what I want the listeners to understand, because you are on the cutting edge of what a lot of people are not really doing or talking about. But this is how you have to feel what your company feels like, see how they're communicating, like see, feel, hear. You're bringing all the senses and the sensory systems back into their company. It's not just, you know how companies used to be very robotic? A lot of them still are. Very robotic. It's just like, this is what we do and how we do it. And now you're increasing their awareness. Because it is the bottom line is our belief systems and what we feel, hear, and see. And that's what I love about what you're doing, because you're waking people up in a whole mm-hmm. new way of how we can actually be kind and how we can work and thrive together.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the sensory systems, which I think is really important. And this emotional piece, speaking of robotic, yeah. robotic companies, is that there are no emotions at work, right? That's a mindset. And when we look at and understand that every culture has an emotional component to it, that collective consciousness, the idea that mindsets are contagious, and it makes sense. And this is an example people usually resonate with. When you have one negative person in a meeting, what happens at the meeting? Right?
Oh, yeah.
Usually goes south unless everyone has enough resilience to kind of overcome it. Most people understand that example because they've all experienced it. But the emotional, if you ignore the emotions in your company, if you ignore the emotions in your culture, I mean, that's bad for people. But the other thing that doesn't work about it is that you miss what I call really important signals in the cultural system. So the emotions, positive emotions and negative emotions both, are going to signal you early. Actually, they're kind of pioneers, I notice. You know,
<Yeah.
laughs> they come out early, right? They come out early as pioneers or, you know, centuries or something. And they tell you about your culture. So if you ignore emotions, you ignore them at your peril because they're messengers. And if you really honor them and say, oh, even if you don't know what it means, I don't know what that means, but let me find out, you're going to be way ahead of the game.
Yeah. You know, it's so true. And this is something nobody talks about in business.
No, very rarely.
They always, a lot of times, if you bring up the emotions, the first thing you go, oh, it's hooey wooey, it's weird. But what I found is the reason people find a way to reject the emotional part, especially in business, is there's actually fear on the other side that if they dive and open it in, they're going to have to look at things in a whole new perspective, which is scary if you've never been trained in that.
It is scary. And it's also the part of leaders. One thing I talk with leaders about when I am being engaged in a project is you cannot change the culture of your organization without changing yourself as a leader. It is impossible because it's not all those people out there that need to change.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's every single person needs to shift something, including all of the leaders. And that's one reason, I think, as your point about fear, is one reason leaders sometimes don't look at themselves is because it's so scary. What if I'm the reason this doesn't work well? What if I did something, even with the best of intentions, that really messed something up in the company? And it would be easier to not acknowledge that.
It's easier to kind of blame or push it on.
And yeah.
I always say, like, we all have these atmospheres, and if the CEOs and the upper management of companies realize that their atmosphere, their bubble, every time it's bumping into everybody else's bubble, is taking the lead because they are the major driving force, right, of what the company is. I like the more, upside down pyramid. I don't like that sort of CEO down. I like the other way. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's time that we start to look at everybody as not, I always believe when I look energetically what's shifting, not you're in this department, isolated. It's like, get to know what people are doing. You have to understand all their jobs, but get to know. So when you're actually communicating with them, and if that CEO or those upper managers and executives can start to realize, like you said, how their atmosphere affects something. So if they walk into a meeting having a really crappy attitude, now all of a sudden everybody else, because they feel it. And they are all like, I was happy 5 minutes ago. Now I want to bite your head off. So take the breath and realize that your emotion can change the outcome of that meeting like that. Take a breath before you go in. How many times do you see people, they run into a meeting and, oh, shit, and all of a sudden everybody else is like doing this in the meeting. I've seen it where they're all now tense, angry. They just want to get the meeting done.
There was recently, I was in a meeting at a company I've been working with for a while, and the CEO actually was sitting like this.
Oh,
and
no.
he doesn't normally do that. But someone commented, of course, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is really not good. And someone actually commented on it in the room because enough trust has been built up, you know, where they could do that. And no one would be worried he'd do anything, you know, but he actually, I never quite found out what was going on, but he didn't even take the cue. It was interesting. He just looked at the person and went back to that same body language.
Wow.
And so, you know, we just continued because we're not going to call him out in the middle of a meeting, you know, at that point. and just continued and finished the meeting. And then everyone just kind of went with it and it was okay. But body language matters, doesn't it? Like you said, someone comes in frantically, and I think those of us who work with people a lot as consultants or the way you do, Tracy, you know, we learn to really be aware of our energy and our emotions and our presence before we engage with folks, because we know it matters and it impacts them. But if you've never been trained in it, if you've never thought about it, you're going to come in any which way.
Yeah. And most people, like you said, they're not trained.
Right.
They just sit there like, okay. Or like we said, how many times have you been in a meeting and you can tell if someone doesn't like something someone said and the arms get crossed and they're like sitting there like this. And you're like, right away, they're closed. You and the bodies are reading how closed they are. Mm-hmm. And this is why you writing this book, and again, people, you have to, because we get a lot of people on the iTunes and they always send me these messages. So, you know, if you're listening on the iTunes to understand why they need your book, because this is going to be the way we are going to be moving into when people talk about shifts and what's happening on the planet and the world. It's not like it was 10 years ago. And people are always saying to me, Tracy, what's happening in 2020 and, you know, and beyond? I'm like, this, your book, this is what's happening in companies. Mm-hmm. If companies aren't understanding their emotions, like you say, how to have a really good structure in their business where they're flexible, they're open to change, they're communicating, they're looking at people, they're going to be left behind because the old systems of how we all functioned, no matter what system that is, they're changing right now. This is why we see so much evil in going on in governments or bankings or politics, whatever. It's because we have to change to be better to each other, to be better humans. And this is what your book is really driving people to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is about being a better human. And I think it's also sometimes within the culture arena itself, the field of culture, people talk a lot about, similar to what you're saying about kindness, right? And being human and all of that. And I will add into that, because it's a caveat I always add in, part of it, it's being kind, but it's also helping people be their best, which includes giving feedback, holding people accountable, right? And having that, because sometimes people mistake being kind for, we'll just be kind and not give people feedback or hold them accountable.
Yeah,
No, we want to actually, we do want high performance, but not at the expense of human beings. We want high performance because people are growing.
Exactly. And when you give them constructive criticism to help them be the best they are, like you were saying, be careful with your words, how you say it, you can change someone's behavior and motivate them where they walk out going, yeah, I don't want to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And they will perform better. I noticed one time when I was in corporate a long time ago, someone asked me if I would just kind of observe a meeting that was going on. They had a lot of negative behavior going on. And I just said, it was that person over there. And they're like, well, how did you notice? I said, well, look at how he's saying, look at how he's talking. Like, and their sales had dropped. And so as soon as they removed the person, they were like, oh, I don't think they fit within our space. Their revenue literally doubled. Like their guys were all happy again. They're out there. They're, you know, having their drinks after work, which they all stopped doing that. They stopped even socializing together, which was part of their culture. They love socializing together. So not all companies like that, but they did. And the guy was like, the CEO coming says, I can't believe how quickly we went back to people being happy. Mm-hmm. I'm like, but you have to start to read. What are people feeling? Who came in? What are they saying? And this is what you're talking about.
It is exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what I'm talking about. And I say those, you know, very similar things. It's the art of observation, being what I call a cultural detective for looking at culture. How do we observe, notice, listen, tune in, like you did in that meeting, right?
Yeah.
And find out what is working and what's not working. It's such a great example of how one person can make a difference in either direction.
Oh, yeah. And then when they went back and they were like, yeah, good job. How'd you? And they were really supporting each other in the language. It was like, it was that easy. Like we're struggling over, was it our site? Was it our guys? What is our? And I'm like, no. And this is why, like, your book couldn't have come out at a better time. This is what I don't think people understand. Like, it's hot off the press. Like,
hot off the press.
Yeah, hot off the press. And everyone really needs to have a copy of it because, again, we all are in companies, whether it's our own or you work for something. Mm-hmm. Even if you are a stay-at-home mom, that's your company.
Right.
Your
kids
are your company. You want a culture in there that you can communicate with your children. So your book, when I look at it, it's not just geared for, I'm sorry, I don't think that's my personal opinion going through it. It's not just geared for companies. Yes, it is. But I mean, everyone can take something from your book and apply it to their life, because we're always within our own little corporate structures.
It absolutely, it's written, you know, I talk about businesses in the book, of course, but
yes,
absolutely. It works for any organization. And I believe your family is an organization too, as you were saying. So you can apply this to any, you know, your place of worship, your any sort of, you know, organized group of people that come together, relationship with one other person. I mean, because you're looking at, you know, how does it authentically operate? What do you need to have, right? How do you design what you need, right? And what's your plan for getting there?
And this is what's so brilliant about what you wrote, because for a lot of books are just geared, like you said, this is just corporate. Like, we all have all these books over time we've had to buy. Okay, this is my budgeting, this is my corporate. Yours gets to the heart, to the nucleus. Mm-hmm. And this is why it is far beyond, like, everybody can read this and take something from it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you're right. Your family is your place of worship, your community center, whatever it is.
Right.
It's an energy. It is, it is a culture.
Right. Right.
It's a way.
Everything has a culture to it. Everything. Our families have cultures. And I'll often say to organizations, think about your, you know, family of origin, whether you liked it or that family or not, you knew exactly how it operated, what you were supposed to do and not supposed to do, whether it was spoken about. And that's what culture really is.
It is. And that's why your book, in my personal opinion, and I, is just, it's so expansive to everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's why I wanted you here today, because I want everyone to understand this communication and its culture. And it is, like you said, it's brilliance, and it changes. Mm-hmm. Once you change your structure, it's infectious. Everybody's going to pick it up.
Yeah, you can. And thank you so much. It really, the book is meant to be expansive. It's meant to give people a system for change, right? It's not telling you what to change. It's not telling you how you're supposed to be. You figure that out yourself, because as an organization or as a person, because you're tuning in to the sensory systems. You're noticing, you're observing, you're understanding what's needed. You're figuring out how to get there. But it's not prescribing how you're supposed to be as a culture at all. It's actually asking you to notice who you are, notice your own brilliance, and that kind of emergence.
I think that's actually one of the number one takeaways that people can take today after the show is exactly what you said, observation and tuning into their sensory systems.
Yeah, yeah.
Which really, really affects your whole life.
Mm-hmm. If something doesn't feel right, don't dismiss it.
No, that intuition.
Yeah, your intuition, just whatever, a pit in your stomach.
Yeah, that gut feeling.
Right, yeah.
Well, because, and again, people, you need, the other reason is because you spend most of your life working. Most people do, right?
Yeah.
So in some capacity, and your family culture, well, that's with you till the day you die. So you're always needing to structure. Okay, I know. I can't believe we're already at the top of the hour. Man, these go so quickly.
Wow. They do.
Carter, our producer, is like, we got to wrap up. Okay.
Yeah.
So again, tell everybody where they can find you on Transformation Talk Radio. I know it's Fridays and I know the time, but I want them to hear from you.
Okay.
And where to get the book and how they can learn more about you.
Great. Thank you. So my show is Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. Same as the book title. It is on Transformation Talk Radio. And my show is the second and fourth Fridays of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time. My website is culturalbrilliance.com. We have a theme here and with Cultural Brilliance. And the book is on the website or Amazon. And you can find out more about me also on the website. And I would love to connect with anybody. Check in, chat, you know, hear about your situation at work and see if I can help.
Lots of great feedback. I am so thrilled that you joined us today.
Thank you, Tracy.
I have had so much fun with you. Like I said, I can't believe the hour is up. I love where you're going. I love your book. I love what you've done. It's so unique. So I want everyone to just go get it. Amazon's easy. I love Amazon. It comes the next day. It's great, guys. So go and get it. And thank you so much. everybody, I am so happy that you joined us today. I hope you will check us out next week, where we are going to be actually discussing with Leanne Townsend. She is a energetic, I call her intuitive lawyer. She teaches you how to divorce properly, through the energy of what exactly Claudette and I were talking about today. So have an incredible week, and we'll see you next week on the Tracy L. Clark Show on Transformation Talk Radio.
Thank you for listening to the Tracy L. Clark Show with me, Tracy L., where I teach you how to live your extraordinary life. Tune in every Tuesday, 8 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio, where I combine ministry, science, and spirituality, revealing the steps you need to transcend perceived limitations. As a remarkable leader and pioneer in my field, I, Tracy L., will provide insights energetically and the tools required to move you forward. For more information on my partnership program, check us out at tracylclark.com.